Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So faster,
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for August 18th, 2026. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed, wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find us on social media at Open Voice Gate. That's both on Blue Sky and on Twitter. And if you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in our show notes. It'll take you to a redcircle.com landing site. Click the red box that says sponsor this podcast. And you can set up a one-time or reoccurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears, joined alongside your other host, Case Lowe. And Case, I was just telling you, we're in the peak of Texas summer. I know that y'all now have Tornado Alley, but saw my thermometer right as we started to get recording, and I'm reminded in a lot of ways why people are afraid of the heat, because it showed up as 109, and I have to say, Case, that feels like is 109, so we finally have hit the mythical, at least it's a dry heat kind of thing, so I could pretend I'm in New Mexico or Arizona, I guess.
It's quite hot. That is quite the temperature. That is really something.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I keep on telling myself that, like, okay, our summer really kicks in at this point. That means that really Labor Day, getting into the fall, college football season, things will finally start to cool off again. And then I think, man, that means that my winter and usually when the bad ice storms happen are in February. And it's kind of weird to think that, like, seasons have shifted, like, that far inward or outwards, at least in Texas at this point. Like, summer's not really until August. Winter's not really until February. It's kind of throwing, like, my brain off kilter a little bit.
Yeah, I can totally understand why. A quick programming note before we jump into Mike. I mean, I would say a plethora of Dragon Gate action. Is that a fair assessment for what we have to cover tonight?
I have three different PDFs of notes for you because it's that much Dragon Gate we have tonight.
It's that much Dragon Gate, and I will say up top, before we get into the programming note, before we get into all the Dragon Gate stuff, before we talk a little New Japan, the Dragon Gate stuff that we've watched in this past week, top to bottom as a whole, I think is the best Dragon Gate stuff. I'll say the best vibe that Dragon Gate has had since the February Cork and Hall show.
Yeah, you know, I think that, like, 2 weeks into this tournament, and especially getting the chance to get through all of it, go back and rewatch that Osaka Stella Hall show, and then this weekend's Kobe show. Coming out of the Kobe show in particular, I was going like, wow, I should not be impressed to this degree that it's not just the Rey de Pareja stuff that's feeling really good. And then, you know, the tournament has been a fun tournament to this point, but it's even a show that has a effective Royal Sambo to push across storylines that are going on that are away from the tournament. And I contrast that to just like February, where we were like begging for angles, and or March and April in that.
March is really the one, because I was thinking about this as I was watching some of this stuff. Where
after uno, dos, tres.
Yeah, I think sometimes with any promotion that you follow incredibly closely, that you know the booking patterns of, you know, I'm really into All Japan right now, but I don't know All Japan enough to be able to watch a show and have this feeling. This is something, you know, for me, it's a little unique to Dragon Gate. I certainly have had a bad feeling about CMLL all year and really haven't checked it on CMLL since late spring, early summer. AEW, again, I feel like I know that promotion well enough to have this feeling, but there was something about that February Corkin show, and especially Uno Dos Tres, and then really, really kicked into gear on that March Corkin show, where you just had to sit there and go, something is not right here. And this is not just the feeling of what happens when every once in a while you get a lame duck show. You know, even Dragon Gate at their best has had these Corkin shows that maybe don't fire on all the cylinders that they were hoping for them to hit. I always think about, you know, in that 2013 to 2016 run, there's a few Corkins that stand out in my mind as shows where you just go like, oh, well, that wasn't up to snuff of what we were getting. There's that Corkin, I think it's the July, no, it's because July 2015 is when I started reviewing for voicesofwrestling.com. I think this was June 2015. It's a show headlined by Yamadoi versus Teok and Eita, and it just, that whole show just doesn't hit. And the consensus at the time was, not a great show, nothing to be concerned about. On to Kobe World we go, we'll be good. Something in February felt a little off at that Corkin show. Uno Dos Tres with the finish of that show did not feel good. And then coming out of Uno Dos Tres with that bad finish into that March Corkin, you and I have been doing this long enough now to go, well, this is going to be a problem. I don't think they're going to be able to shake this anytime soon. And so, you know, if Dragon Gate was a vessel, if Dragon Gate was a body, they lost a lot of blood heading into Golden Coliseum. They continued to bleed out throughout the summer. And it seemed like maybe we're not restoring our health completely as we are in now Rey de Parejas, but we have stopped the bleeding. That is why I think these shows feel as good as they do, at least the footage that we have from these shows. It feels like the combination of Shun Skywalker leaving, which we'll obviously talk about in depth, the combination of Madoka Kakuta no longer being Dreamgate champion, which I think matters a little bit more than maybe KZ specifically being the Dreamgate champion, and just the fact that there are some really hungry wrestlers on this roster who are getting an opportunity to wrestle in big and lengthy and important matches on this tour. Again, I don't think we're regrowing any limbs that we may have lost at this point. We're not there yet, but the bleeding feels like it has been stopped, and we've been bleeding for a very, very long time this year.
Yeah, and if we want to kind of want to pinpoint the point where things really started turning around, I think you do have to look at Kobe World. And really, when we sat before Kobe World, so it's like, we're not even talking 30 days ago, but sitting before Kobe World, when we're like, okay, we're entering the show at a 4. We could be exit it at a 1, basically be on death's door, or we could be like at a 7 or an 8. And we ended up being like at a 6, but we've had a month of a 6. And then we turn around and you have a tournament that's giving so many people a lot more interesting things to do. And I think from some people, maybe not top line, not high up on the bullet points on like the notes to have for this tournament, but if you get into the point of the league recap that you're just like throwing in, okay, other facts going on here, there's some pleasant surprises that are happening that I think at least through 2 weeks of this Rey de Parejas, it's really given everyone a lot to do. And then at least from the full network shows of what we've had, it's been a I wouldn't say that there is no all the way back at this point. Like it's something that you're going to have to give us not a month of good work. You have to give us months and quarters, and maybe we need to have the deeper conversation as a calendar year comes close about that kind of thing. But
This is gonna blend into a few different things that we're gonna talk about here. As an onlooker, more so than an active viewer of a lot of modern day New Japan stuff, I personally feel that for the last 3 or 4 years, a lot of the conversation rooted around New Japan is this promotion will have a good show. Everybody will be very quick to crown the idea of New Japan, quote unquote, being back. The booking will disappoint. The people that they picked up after the one show, after the one match that got a lot of buzz, will slowly sort of fade away. They'll hit bottom in terms of whatever the bottom level of New Japan discourse is. And then they'll have another great show and it'll pick back up. And it's you know, it's this very sort of jagged line, fan-based jagged line discourse in New Japan. And so for a while, I do not think this show will be doing the is Dragon Gate back to whatever marker you want to give, whether it's are we back to 2021 levels? Are we back to 2024 levels? Are we back to early 2025 levels? I'm not even in the ballpark of having that conversation. I don't want to have that conversation because I think that's an odd, like, I just, that seems to be the way that people view New Japan. And maybe those hardcore New Japan fans disagree, but as somebody that's just slightly removed from the lion mark at this point, that is how I feel those conversations often go, is Wrestle Kingdom, we're so back. New beginning, here we go. Golden era resumes. And then, never mind, I'll see you guys at the G1. G1's good, great. And then we lose them in the fall, then we're back for Wrestle Kingdom. It feels like that is sort of the pattern of events, at least from my perspective, that New Japan has gone throughout the last few years. So I don't want to do that with Dragon Gate. We're talking about what has been a very good, but not exactly mind-blowing Rey de Parejas tournament. But I think that's the nice thing about it, is that it's just been very good. It's been minimal bullshit. The teams that we thought were going to be great have been great. There's one match that I absolutely, absolutely adored. Another match that really caught me by surprise that we'll do here. I'll give spoiler-free match recommendations before we get into Rey de Parejas. But
yeah, we'll do that then, yeah.
All in all, I wanted to say up top that I'm enjoying this tour basically as much as anything that hasn't directly involved Big Boss Shimizu this year.
I just think there's just a lot of interesting things happening, and at least from like the way that this tour is being presented and getting the block matches of that from the house shows and then having the full network shows of the usual network stops here, there's a lot of things going on, and I think my eye went to the Royal Sambo that happened this weekend and how they were interweaving all the Rio Fuda stuff that's not even related to Rey de Parejas whatsoever into it. But then they were also kind of previewing future block matches, and they were getting into Dream Gate and Brave Gate kind of things there. And then you kind of take a step back and you go, you know, usually that would have been a complete blow off of a Battle Royal just to get the other 12 people on the roster on the show. But we're seeing things that are good signs. I do think that it's the kind of things that, at least as someone who is so hesitant about this tag league and the placement of the tag league, it's been really affirming to see, and has had me kind of be a lot more open about having the August tournaments in the future.
So as for that aforementioned programming note that I said I was going to bring up, and then we got sidetracked on a mini Rey de Parejas conversation there, I want to note early on this podcast that next week is the return of Those Days, a Michinoku Pro retrospective series. We will be doing episode 18, which, believe it or not, will not cover the end of 1996. Our most recent episode was 10-10-96. We did that back in late June. Late June. I was in my old apartment. We have not done one from my current apartment, so that was the timeline I was trying to match up in my head there. So we'll be back next week for an episode of Those Days. The last one, again, was 10-10-96 with Alan Forel. Love that episode. That was so much fun to do. Now was your chance to get caught up on that footage. Now that the G1 is over, Rey de Parejas is pretty light viewing. Get caught up on that Michinoku Pro podcast. Get caught up on that Michinoku Pro footage, because next week we will return. There is so much footage in the last quarter of 1996 that we are actually not finishing out 1996 on this next episode. It'll take us another one, which should come very shortly after next week's episode, to get to matches like 12-16-96, the ultimate Michinoku Pro multi-man match. But next week, we're going to talk a little WAR. We're going to talk a little JWP.
Yes, WAR time.
Absolutely. And then we are going to talk about the Michinoku Pro 1996 Tag Team Tournament, which features the Michinoku Pro debut of El Hijo del Santo. So I'm very happy to have that back. I'm looking forward to getting back into the swing of it. I was telling somebody today, this day specifically, today, the day we're recording this, feels like the slowest day that I've had in about 6 weeks. Life for me is...
I'm glad to hear that, bud. You deserve to have a little bit of a break.
It's not going to be slow for too long, but I have been on about a 6 week stretch where I feel like I've been as busy as I've ever been, even doing just the weekly recording of this show and the usual time that we've been doing it has been quite the hurdle for me. Today has been a little bit slower. I was able to think about Mitch Doku Pro stuff for a little bit. I was able to think a lot about Rey de Parejas, and I was able to think a lot about the G1 Climax final, and specifically as it pertains to this podcast, the debut of Shun Skywalker in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
That's right. So Shun Skywalker didn't make it very long on the free agent list. He made his debut at the semifinal night of the G1 Climax 36, as well as Hiroshi Tenzin's retirement show, showing up after a Hantai versus House of Torture match, declaring that he is Shun Skywalker, he's in New Japan, and that he loves House of Torture, and immediately going after the New Japan World TV champion, Konosuke Takeshita. Next night, it wasn't semi-main event, it was third from the top, Hantai versus House of Torture. Shun gets the win over Satoshi Kojima with the moonsault knees, and we have Shun's first title match already announced for New Japan, and at a building case that he is very, very familiar with, and this will be an aspect of this that I will want to get into in a bit. He is going to challenge Konosuke Takeshita for the New Japan World TV Championship at Kobe World Cannon Hall at Destruction in Kobe.
Let's go chronological here. Let's start with his debut and the fact that Shun is in the House of Torture. Your thoughts on that, and then we'll break down how he looked in his first match in New Japan. But the idea of Shun Skywalker joining House of Torture, I guess I should note before I throw it back to you, you know, Shun announced that he was leaving Dragon Gate in June. You and I immediately reported, and you can go back and listen to this. This is the June Cork and Hall review episode that we did. You and I immediately reported that this was not a storyline and that Shun Skywalker would be debuting in New Japan Pro Wrestling sometime soon. During that episode, it was not clear if Skywalker's final appearance in Dragon Gate would be at Kobe World, which is heavily speculated, or if it would be sometime after that. It ended up being the August Cork and Hall show. But I do want to note, as with many other Dragon Gate stories in the past in terms of roster movement and where people are going, you and I were very quick to jump on Skywalker going to New Japan. We had that confirmed right from two separate sources that had nothing to do with each other, people that do not speak to each other. And I just want to note that once again, Open the Voice Gate, very early to report that, and accurately reported the entire timeline of Shun Skywalker events leading to him going to New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Right, and I think that really the only question that we had, and with checking back with people, the only question that we had going over the 2 month time period, the only thing that changed was, is it going to be a Shun Skywalker or is he going to be unmasked? And that was the one thing that it did not seem like that there was ever any consensus of. It did seem like at one time people were going like, yeah, I know he's going to be unmasked, and then the other people going like, I don't know necessarily just what he's coming in. So it was a pretty streamlined thing, and I think that without getting fully into the situation with Daya, like, I think that it was always, whereas Daya, there's been conflicting things from the start, at least that we've talked about on this program. I know that Joe Lanza has his own reporting, and it's different people than we discuss with, and I can't necessarily say I completely co-sign what Joe has said about Daya. But with Daya, it was a lot more muddled, and it still is a lot more muddled. Shun Skywalker, it was a straightforward of a story that I think we've ever had, to be quite honest.
I'm struggling to think of one. I mean, Ishida going to Glate was something that we knew about for a little bit, but the Skywalker one was more or less an open secret by the time that it was announced. And I don't think it was surprising to anybody who had any conversations about what Shun Skywalker had been up to lately.
Right. And I mean, it just so happened that but this morning or this afternoon, I ended up getting the weekly pro wrestling that they did last week about Shun's departure, and I haven't got it scanned yet. I know, Case, I sent you a couple photos of it. It's like a 15-page spread for Shun Skywalker, but at least from what I know about it, and I haven't got it like scanned and OCR'd or anything, I know that Mochizuki got pissed about that article. But the other thing that I saw about it was that article basically tipped the hand that he was going to be in New Japan the next week. So let's talk about the first night and Shun showing up as Shun Skywalker in basically the same outfit that he's had from I think for like the last year, you know, going for the all black kind of look there and joining straight into House of Torture. And I got to be honest, Case, I'm just going to refer to what I reposted on Blue Sky. And it kind of summarizes how I feel about this. Shun Skywalker in New Japan in House of Torture is like seeing someone who was one of the most inventive, most incredible chefs, French Laundry level, Elena El Bulli, what have you, who for 8 years was doing some of the most innovative cooking, who only now has insisted for the last 15 months to make peanut butter jelly sandwiches. And they left to go make more peanut butter jelly sandwiches on an even bigger stage at an even bigger restaurant. And for me, that's kind of boring. And it's kind of a frustrating kind of thing, but it was expected though. Like I didn't think that he was going to show up, kick Ren Narita out of House of Torture and completely rewrite the unit in one night. But it just very low levels of enthusiasm I have for Shun Skywalker doing House of Torture stuff.
I seem to be a little bit higher on it than everybody else, and I think that is very specifically tied to the idea that this is what we expected. You know, if there was some inkling of an idea that Skywalker was going to be joining TMDK and then he ended up in the House of Torture, okay, then I would be devastated. Then I would have some level of disappointment. On the whole, though, this is what I thought was going to happen. And I think much like Shingo Takagi, and so much of Shun's debut reminded me of the early days of Shingo in New Japan, which is an incredibly flattering thing to say towards anybody. But I think much like at the beginning of Shingo's New Japan career, there is an idea of what this guy is going to be, what this guy's ceiling is. And I think as time goes on, in the same way that Shingo blew my expectations out of the water, and I consider myself to be one of the biggest Shingo fans on the planet, I think Shun could very easily find himself in a position where he rises above House of Torture nonsense, gets himself out of this unit, and gets himself into a legitimately pushed and prized position within New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah, and I feel like the real judge of Shun's position is like where Shun will be, you know, going into New Japan Cup, you know, like that's going to be like the real determination of it for him. Because you bring up the Shingo Takagi thing, he immediately kind of steps into the role that Shingo Takagi has had sometimes in promotion in New Japan Pro Wrestling, which is whenever they run a show at World Memorial Hall, that more often than not, Shingo Takagi is either in a title match or maybe main eventing or at least in the top two matches on the show. And they've already announced Shun Skywalker for this in this world title match in a match that should be objectively great. You know, I mean, it's Konosuke Takeshita versus Shun Skywalker. Objectively, that is a match that has such a high ceiling if given the opportunity to. But like the House of Torture trappings and all that immediately pull my expectation window further away from it being that dream match kind of potential. But you know, you go and you get a Shun Skywalker for a reason, and it's not just to fill out your roster and try to get someone else who's just turned 30 and is able to be your main event for the next decade. It's also the reality of what he did for the last decade too, and where he is already considered a good draw. So I fully expect that we see nearly for like the next few years, whenever they run Kobe, watch where Shun Skywalker is, because that's part of the reason why they got him.
Well, and it freshens up what they can do in Kobe because they have booked every big Shingo match imaginable.
Yeah, they've done to
Kobe.
That. They've
you know, and I look, you know, Shingo, as crazy as it sounds, because I still have a hard time wrapping my head around this idea sometimes, the guy's not new to New Japan. He's been there 8 years now. It'll be 8 years in October since Shingo has been in New Japan, which is crazy to think about. I mean, he spent, what, 14 in Dragon Gate 2004 to 2018? He's going to be at 8 in New Japan. We're going to hit a point. I mean, by the time Shingo retires, he'll have been a New Japan Pro Wrestling wrestler longer than he was a Dragon Gate wrestler. And so throughout that time, I mean, let me pull up Shingo's cage match. Let me just see what they've done with him and Kobe, because that, to me, is one of the telling things about this Skywalker debut, is that you not only are immediately putting him in a coveted position against Konosuke Takeshita, which is great, you're doing it in Kobe, which says that they know what they have with Skywalker and Takeshita. And Mike, by the way, Shingo Takagi began his New Japan career as a junior, and Skywalker is very much being positioned as a heavyweight already.
Right, yeah, because they're more height motivated for that kind of determination than weight. Like, Shun's just about 6 feet tall.
Yes, and he looks great in this on this New Japan roster. I don't think he looks too small.
He looks like the biggest guy in House of Torture now that Don Fale is not around.
Yeah, I was, you know, as somebody that tries to avoid Rin Narita,
House of Torture.
House of Torture. And I was surprised. I know this will come across as body shaming, but I was a little taken aback by the shape of Rin Narita. I wasn't ready for all of that.
They're body suiting him, man. They're body.
Oh yes,
him.
They are. And that bodysuit is not a slimming bodysuit by any means. Shingo in Kobe World Hall in his New Japan career. A singles match against Hiroki Goto, Destruction in Kobe 2019. Singles match against Will Ospreay. This was the rematch from the Super Juniors final in 2019. This was the G1 show in 2020. Let me see if this headline really quick. I would imagine this was the main event on that show. No, Jay White Okada, your main event. Top three on this show, Mike. Kota Ibushi, Tomohiro Ishii, Shingo Takagi, Will Ospreay, Jay White, Kazuchika Okada. Not bad.
Yeah. What year was that?
That was 2020. So that's in the heart of the pandemic, which is why don't remember it as an all-time great show. But
I was about to say, did that get above 8,000 in that building? Because that should have. In a normal capacity time, considering the heat of everyone at that time, that probably could have done about 8,000 there. It probably did like 2,000 because of capacity rules.
That's the thing. There is perhaps no greater illustration of the long-term damage that COVID did to Japanese pro wrestling, where you hear that card in that building and you go, oh, well, this should have done 8,000 people. Mike, this show did 2,500 fans.
Yep. So that would have been like a under 50% capacity what they could have done there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Goto in 2019, Ospreay in 2020, Shingo versus Yuji Nagata, G1 Climax 2021. He's in a multi-man tag at Burning Spirit 2022. He is in a multi-man tag at Wrestling Dontaku 2023. That's actually in Kobe Sambo Hall. And then he returns to Kobe World Kenan Hall, Destruction in Kobe 2023 against Great Okan, a never open weight title match against Hanare in 2024 at Destruction in Kobe, and in 2025 at Destruction in Kobe, he wrestles Gabe Kidd in an IWGP Global Heavyweight title match. So as you can see, since 2019, they like wheeling this guy out there and either putting him in a big G1 spot when the G1 was coming through Kobe, or now they just do Destruction in Kobe. And 3 years in a row, Okan singles match, Hanare singles match, Gabe Kidd singles match the last 3 years. It would make sense that if Shun Skywalker wasn't around, that they might do Shingo versus Takeshita in that spot. That would certainly fit the billing of the other matches he's been a part of in New Japan in Kobe, but now you can slide Skywalker in there, and that's fresher than another big Shingo singles match in Kobe.
Yeah, no, and especially for like how they are positioning you if you're above the age of 40 in that promotion, it was time for them to kind of get that Shingo replacement in that building.
As for his debut, you know, ultimately, I mean, that's the thing. He's over. I understand it. It's almost like it's the tricky thing with this Skywalker thing is we're now going to have to weigh some level of commercial success versus some level of critical success. I think Skywalker very quickly has the potential to become a very big star in New Japan Pro Wrestling. He might do it while doing the worst work of his career, which is an oddity, and it's a bummer that that happens. But I feel like Skywalker very quickly, in a promotion that, look, the G1, from what I've seen of it, has been phenomenal. I love the finals. I love Oiwa. I've been a huge fan of that guy ever since he went on excursion to Noah. I think the guy's absolutely terrific. I'm glad they pulled. They're starting to pull the trigger on him. It is still, at times, when guys are not at the absolute apex of their game, it is still a roster that can be somewhat charisma deficient. And Shun Skywalker and House of Torture might not be able to rack up a bunch of killer matches, but he's never going to be charisma deficient. And so Skywalker, I think, very quickly is going to make his presence felt on this roster. Mike, I talk about all the time Dragon Gate's mishandling of Jackie Kame and Rita as a tag team, and the idea that they're missing reaching a type of AEW fan that should be salivating at the idea of a Young Bucks versus Jackie Kame and Rita match. That, throughout wrestling, say for an F4W board user, that should be widely considered to be a dream match. And it's not, because people there don't know who Kame and Rita are. That means that people there also don't know who Shun Skywalker is, or their exposure to him has been extremely limited. So while there are things that throughout the 5 years we've been covering Skywalker as a heel, while there are things that we're either a little tired of or a little numb to, or maybe just immune to at this point, the presentation between what he was doing at the end of Z-Bratz and throughout Psypatra through one match in House of Torture is not all that dissimilar. And while there's a negative connotation, rightfully so, that comes with anything that House of Torture is doing, for a lot of these people, Skywalker is coming in as a fresh act and a fresh name, and they're unaware of the moaning and the screaming and the dramatics that are going to come with that, and that includes Western fans and Japanese fans. And I think very, very quickly, he could get hot in this promotion, even being bogged down with House of Torture nonsense.
Yeah, and I think that it is just so clear that he picked the right time for this too, because he is virtually fresh into this promotion. I mean, he's had only those interactions when he's like showed up on like Tanahashi Jam and like Purge Night and stuff like that. So he's been mostly contained. So as he right now, he's going to be doing stuff like House of Torture and like Takeshita. When the calendar changes and when they're looking at what the New Japan schedule and like the matchups to highlight for New Japan Cups and G1 Climaxes, they have years and years now of Shun Skywalker potential first time big matches that I would have to think that whenever New Japan Cup rolls through Kobe, that you'd expect them to make a big deal of like, oh, hey, it's Shun Skywalker versus Yuya Uemura or someone, you know, because they essentially get a completely fresh hand to play with. And that's exciting. I mean, that aspect of it is exciting. I think that, you know, I'm still going to keep an eye on his big, like, Tier A New Japan matches. I'm not going to keep up with him on Road 2s. And if he's tagging with House of Torture, it's going to take a lot for me to not skip that match. But, you know, the more opportunity he gets to put it on the main stage, I mean, he, as we laid out, for 10 years in Dragon Gate, he had one of the top five most impactful careers, and he gets to enter this promotion at 30, virtually unscathed and fresh. And I think that if you're a New Japan fan, that's incredibly exciting.
The biggest takeaway I have from this, look, there's a lot of good headed in Skywalker's direction. He got a great response during his debut. I thought in ring, the day after his debuting angle, I thought he looked great. I thought he had great chemistry with Takeshita, and I thought he had great chemistry with Kojima. And the real Shingo heads will remember that Dominion 2019 singles match right before he entered the G1, where he went out there with Kojima. They had an absolute belter. And it was only then that it hit me during, you know, for as much as I had followed Shingo's career, for as much as I love the guy, where I was like, oh my God, I think we're going to get Shingo Takagi in a G1 climax. Like, this is happening, and this is unbelievable, and he crushed it against Kojima, and they're doing a very similar thing now with Skywalker. I would not be surprised if he beats Takeshi at Destruction in Kobe, and his first defense is against Satoshi Kojima, which sounds really exciting. The other thing, and Mike, I don't know if you noticed this or not, but Chris Charlton is running down Skywalker's accomplishments during the opening portions of this match, and he talks about how we're at the end of the G1 climax in 2026, but it would not surprise Charlton at all if Skywalker was a guy in play for the finals of next year's G1 climax. And I think Charlton at this point is ingrained in the New Japan system enough. He's certainly not spoiling anything by any means, but I don't think he would say that if Skywalker was just going to be casually tossed aside after a big debut. So I wanted to note that as well.
Yeah, no, it does kind of feel like he is coming in with a level of prestige that, I mean, it'll be interesting for us to sit down and have this conversation about Shun Skywalker on August 18th, 2027, because I think that things can move pretty quickly for the guy.
I agree. Again, I'm very bullish on his New Japan career after one match. Given the way that he was presented and given the way that I thought he rose to the occasion, he is going to have the biggest uphill battle imaginable being in House of Torture. It's going to be a massive turnoff for me, and I'm really rooting for the guy. He is, after all, my favorite wrestler. But I think if anybody can do it, I said this to somebody that asked me last week, you know, somebody that was a little bit more familiar with New Japan than they were at Dragon Gate, but knows how I think of Skywalker. You know, is there any chance that this is good? Is there any chance that Shun Skywalker and House of Torture is good? And I said, you know, probably not. It's probably not going to be something that is creatively fulfilling or critically fulfilling for people like you and I.
But it's anybody, making butter jelly sandwiches, Case.
Yeah. But if anybody could do it, I think it's Skywalker.
Yeah, and it would solve one of the things that I think we saw the last 15 months of Skywalker, is that making him do House of Torture is putting him through a filter. You know, I mean, it's not his plans necessarily for how his booking necessarily might be is House of Torture the way it is. Now, if we see House of Torture kind of change in the way that they operate as a heel unit, maybe then you can draw a conclusion there. But I think that's a positive in a perverse way that Shun is in House of Torture, because it's going to have someone say no to his ideas.
That is true. That could be a plus. Did you see, before we move on to Rey de Parejas, I anything else to add on Shun?
No. I mean, like, it's exciting to, like, the pop for him coming in was worth it in its way, in that kind of validating sort of way, and seeing how him and Takeshi, I mean, like, that's a major, I mean, you have, that's a major matchup. I mean, you have the biggest star under the age of 30 from one independent company, and then what was the biggest star under the age of 30 from the other independent company. I mean, that's a remarkable program that they're just running right off the bat.
It does. And, you know, it is remarkable. And I guess, again, you know, I talked about this last week when we did sort of the Skywalker career retrospective, where I was just having a really hard time wrapping my head around Skywalker leaving Dragon Gate and the reality of that and how I was feeling about that and how to sort of eulogize his Dragon Gate career. One of the things that I really hadn't considered, and I guess this is worth spending just a second on, is that this now opens the door for Skywalker on Fantastica Mania tours. This now opens the door for Skywalker to work CMLL. And this now opens the door for Skywalker to really give a Forbidden Door card a jolt of interpromotional excitement if need be come next year.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many just interesting things. I mean, like, this can be his route to AEW if people are interested in that. I'm not necessarily interested in with the idea of Shun in AEW so quickly.
I am. I mean, I think he would crush it. And if he's not going to be tethered to Dragon Gate, then why do I give a shit? I'd want to see him in AEW. I want to see him wrestle all those guys. Admittedly, my blood is already boiling at the dumbest of the dumb podcasters, the grifters and the ex-wrestling community, I guess the older wrestling community, the former wrestling community. My blood is already boiling at them making fun of his name and making fun of his look and not fully getting what this guy does. But
sure,
I was against the idea, because it's funny, you know, people would always, when I do my Tony Khan interviews, you know, I get asked a lot, like, oh, do you think about, like, floated some Dragon Gate names by him. It's like, no, I don't want the Dragon Gate guys. I don't want the Dragon Gate guys near AEW. I want them in Dragon Gate. But if Skywalker's not going to be there, then like, fucking get him in AEW tomorrow. I would love to see that.
Yeah, and I guess to be fair, going from Dragon Gate salary to New Japan salary to AEW salary, that's an overwhelming win that gets him up on that list that he's going to be pushing Tozawa, Okada, and Ultimo on that list of richest people in the system. So I would support it for that aspect, absolutely, too.
Yeah, we've never seen Ospreay and Skywalker in the ring together. I would like to see that at some point. You know, we've never seen the Bucks and Shun Skywalker in the ring together. I would like to see that at some point.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right about it. But it's going to be interesting, and at least my other than like knowing that we are essentially just going to duck in and duck out, I think that is the ideal way to consume Shun and New Japan without getting frustrated with the House of Torture stuff.
Did you see the G1 final?
Oh, absolutely, I did. I'm a big Roy guy. I've been a big Roy guy since he was in Noah. Like, I was all here for that. And I like Uemura more than most people do.
I think I'm the one behind the times on that one. I think Uemura has become a very popular wrestler that I just don't... I don't really understand the appeal of, and I still...
He's a golden retriever.
Yeah. I think he's far closer to Sonata than he is Hiroshi Tanahashi. But what were your thoughts on this G1 finals? Because we have not talked about this yet.
Oh, I mean, it was everything that everyone's saying about it. I mean, the way that they worked the wrist lock and inside headlock was phenomenal. And I mean, you have those G1 climax final crowds in that building that just kind of will the right thing to happen. And that was a match that the thing that really kind of took me aback, because I ended up watching the entire G1 climax. But the way that Oiwa just has just a command of presence about him and a certain energy that has kind of been bereft of that generation. And for the people that are from his previous generation, people before him like that, that those are the kind of things that kind of keep me interested in the top line stuff in New Japan. Like my three favorite people from the tournament were Oiwa, Bolton, and Oscar, because I felt like that they were doing the most interesting kind of stuff there. But no, the final was incredible stuff. I do kind of in my mind push back a little bit about now we're going to see a whole bunch of side headlock matches, just because I don't think that you also have the aspect that was the G1 climax final where they're allowed to do what they want to do, and you're going 35 minutes and have like this. Like, there's not going to be a headlock match. Like, maybe the whole Nigel McGuinness ankle thing in the Continental Classic Cup, I guess, could end up being like one of those kinds of matches. But I don't see it being as widely emulated as people were kind of expecting. But I thought it was, I think it's a match that was its match for its time and place, really. And I don't necessarily think that it's kind of like this, the new standard of strong style wrestling and X, Y, and Z, just felt like it was a way to try to brand as something that was just kind of the moment. And I do push a little bit back on that.
Yeah, I was a little surprised, even as somebody that loved the match, about the feedback that it got, especially the day of, because I was reading a lot about this match before I actually watched this match, and I was expecting something way different than what I got. Now, again, I loved the finished product, so I don't necessarily have an issue with it, but I said on Twitter, and unfortunately this tweet was found by the worst audience imaginable, just a pretty vile quote tweet section there, which doesn't bother me on a personal level. It's just more annoying than anything. But I said that the match had the same general structure, pacing, and drama of an epic 2010's G1 final, just built around a headlock instead of a rainmaker. This was far closer to an Okada match than a Jack Briscoe match, and a lot of people are going to tell on themselves while praising it, which I still think is true. I mean, this match...
Yeah, no.
This match to me was a 2010s New Japan match. It was built. I mean, this is the type of thing, and I'm sure you remember this, but in real time, I lived through it, and I was dumbfounded then, as I'm dumbfounded now. You know, very prominent critics and very prominent tastemakers in wrestling, people that had a voice then and have a voice all these years later, were hypercritical of Okada and Tanahashi in those matches, with part of the theory being that a lot of the Rainmaker counters looked like dancing, and New Japan is far too reliant on counters down the finishing stretch, and that's not realistic, and all these things that I never agreed with to begin with, but I found them to be just as prevalent in this match as in anything that Okada and Tanahashi did, or anything that Tanahashi and Ibushi did, or anything that Okada and Nakamura did in 2015, the G1 Finals, which is one of my favorite matches ever. You know, if your retort to that is, well, the work that was done in the beginning of this match mattered, which didn't happen in Okada matches, I fundamentally disagree, but I have no other retort than that. I can respectfully disagree, and we can go about our day, because there's nowhere else to go with that conversation. But I think a lot of people saw something else in this match that I didn't. I think maybe, and look, if this match goes on to influence wrestlers around the world and have a great deal of impact on what we see out of main event wrestling, I think that's a great thing. I would love for more matches to look like this. But this wasn't a Dory Funk Jr. NWA World Heavyweight Championship match. And I think some people are going to run absolutely wild and go absolutely insane with praising the minimalist aspects of this match, which I think were really only a minor detail in the grand scheme of things. This was every bit as massive and epic as Tanahashi and Ibushi from 2018, one of the all-time great matches in the history of wrestling, just with a slightly different offensive approach from either guy. And I'm a little surprised that that gets any pushback whatsoever. I'm surprised that it got the pushback that it did. But this wasn't Hashimoto and Hase at the end of 93. This was an Okada Tanahashi style of match that just happened to have a pretty awesome headlock finish.
Yeah, and I think that there's a lot of people that take I mean, you post that on Twitter, Casey. You know kind of what's going to happen with it in one sort of way, but like the inability of people to sit with a statement and think about, like, okay, so wrist control. Yeah, no, you have like head control and wrist control happening here, but like the idea of like using the headlock as a way to instead of a kick out, basically, and then using like the reversals and such as a way to build up heat is not dissimilar to people ducking out of the Rainmaker or X, Y, and Z. Like it's a similar result. It's just done in a different fashion. And I guess like the thing that I feel like that there is an air of it being talked about as like this like technical masterpiece, which is not what it is. And what it was a incredible match of the moment where a company doing the thing that people have been wanting to do for years. And I think that also amps it up a little bit too. And it's going to be a match that, like, I really mean what I say when I say it's a match of the moment, that I do kind of wonder, like, you in the same way that when they were in that building 2 years previous was Zack Sabre Jr. And that felt of a moment, Zack got the title and then it was kind of like, oh, that's it. Zack won the title. And then there was really not a lot forward for him with that. And there was not a lot of forward motion in the booking for that. So I'm not trying to rain on any parades.
Love the match. It's probably my match of the year right now.
Of the year.
Yeah, I mean,
sure.
And I think it's going to have to take a really special AEW match to beat it. I mean, there's a very good chance that New Japan is back on top for the Voices of Wrestling match of the year poll because of this match. I think for most people, it is now their match of the year. If it's not my number one, it's definitely my top three. I'd really have to sit and think about what I've seen this year. But it's that level of match. I unfortunately think it has struck a chord with a crowd that I often disagree with. And I think a lot of those people are maybe suckering themselves into a narrative and acting like this wasn't a 2010s New Japan match when it very much, I mean, it was a 35 minute match where the first 12 or 13 I was engaged, but I was going, God, I hope this picks up or else I'm really going to be out to lunch here, which is the same thought that I've had for Ibushi and for Nakamura and for Ishii and for Okada and for Tanahashi and for some of those godforsaken Tetsuya Naito matches. Yeah, it's the same. I had the same feeling at the beginning of this match, and I had the same feeling at the end of this match, which is this is fine, but I hope this picks up. And then it picked up, and I went, that's absolutely incredible. That is pro wrestling at the highest level.
Yep, I'm with you on that for that. So should we talk about some Rey de Parejas?
Let's talk about Rey de Parejas. Let me throw up to this point.
Let's our spoiler-free recommendations first before we get into the nuts and bolts. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I'm going to go... 2 weeks ago on this show, we did the review of the Rey de Parejas Corkin kickoff. I am going to include the match that I enjoyed most from that show in this spoiler-free match recommendation. I know Mike really enjoyed, not to speak for you, but I know Mike really liked the Flamita and Sangre Azteca Jr. versus El Cielo and Luis Fonte match on that show. That would not make my personal list, but if you are listening to this and you did not watch the Corkin show, up to this point, we're recording this August 18th of this year of 2026, obviously, and as I quickly scroll to the Drangate Network just to see what is uploaded at this time,
it's everything through that Kobe. There's no shows until the 21st.
Yes, so everything through that Kobe, which would include the 8:15 Rey de Parejas tag matches that were uploaded after the 8:16 show. But everything through 8:16 is up there. The matches that I think you have to go out of your way to watch: Gianni Valletta and Hyo versus Ishin and Yoshiki Kato from August 4th. That is the Corkin Hall show. Jackie Kame and Rita versus Genki Horiguchi and Yasushi Kanda from the 8th. Flamita and Sangre Azteca Jr. versus Hamare and Kazuma Komura from the 9th. Koji Minoura and Yuki Yoshioka versus Jason Lee and Madoka Kakuta from the 15th. Aki and Gucci versus Koji Minoura and Yuki Yoshioka from the 16th. And Hamare and Kazuma Komura versus Jason Lee and Madoka Kakuta also from the 16th in Kobe.
Yeah, so I pulled up my Corkin review too, so I could do that. I would recommend Monte and Cielo versus Flamita and Azteca. I would second the main event there as well. And then to piggyback, yeah, from Himeji on the 8th, Jackie Rita versus Kanda and Genki. And then from Nagano the next night, the Flamita, Azteca Jr. versus Homare and Kimura. Let me pull up Osaka because I did get through Osaka and I had... not as highly recommended, but I was 3.5 on Monte and Cielo versus Kakuta and Lee. And then, yeah, no, from Tsushima, I liked Zenus versus Kakuta and Lee. I would recommend that. And then, yeah, from the Kobe, Kakuta and Lee versus Hamari and Kimura as well. There's been good stuff throughout the entire tournament. And Zenus versus Young Vibes from Kobe.
Yeah, that's my match of the tournament. Yeah, yep. that's unbelievable. That was a really, really fun match. Not one of those that will finish in my global top 10 or my Drangate top 10, but that's as much fun as I've had watching wrestling this year. I thought that was pretty spectacular. From this point forward, there are some spoilers in play because, Mike, I want to break down these block standings with you again. This is through the
8-16. I've got them pulled up right now.
I do as well. Let me go through the A block here with you first. Again, this is through the 8:16 Kobe show. Kame and Rita with 2 points. Kagetora and Susumu with 2 points. Hyo and Valletta with 2 points. Strong Machine J and Leona with 4 points. Kanda and Horiguchi with 2 points. And Ishin and Yoshiki Kato with 0 points. Does anything jump out to you there, Mike?
So it's worth stating that... Hyo and Johnny only have one match left. They have Susumu and Kanda on the 23rd. It's going to be hard for them to advance onwards. The only thing that's helping them out right now is that there's that clump there, and SMJ and Leona are ahead. I think it's kind of interesting the way that they have booked Hyo and Johnny, in that it's essentially been like Hyo, they're not on the same page. Hyo thinks he can wrangle Gianni Valletta, and it's very clear that he cannot wrangle Gianni Valletta whatsoever. And that's kind of been a fun wrinkle and change since, the 2 weeks since we talked about Rey de Parejas. You know, I mean, like, it was looking like the momentum could have been for Hyo and Gianni, and now it's pretty clearly not there. But yeah, I don't really talk much about SMJ and Leona leading the block at this point, just because of they had the Hyo and Gianni match, which, you know, Hyo and Johnny are 1-0-2 and a double count out. So they got a win there, and they still haven't faced they haven't faced Jackie Rita or the tag team champions yet. So, and I mean, Team 204 have only had one match, and it was that Corkin match so far.
Yeah, so I think we've seen the last of Strong Machine J and Leona winning. I think they'll lose to Kame and Rita, and I think they'll lose to Team 204. So that puts them out of the conversation. I think Hyo and Valletta are also out of the conversation. Kondo and Horiguchi were the one team that I wasn't necessarily taking seriously going into this, and they've already wrestled three matches. So we're now at a point
tough for them.
Yeah, it's really tough for them. And this podcast, myself in particular, I've been very, very hard on Genki Horiguchi this year. I will get to praising Genki later, and I have plenty of praise for Genki, but I will
That's good, because I have praise for Kanda.
Excellent. I say that, bear in mind that if Kanda and Horiguchi do win this block, I will throw my remote through the TV, so let's hope that that doesn't happen. So that brings us to a situation where Kame and Rita are in play, Kagetora and Susumu are in play, and Ishin and Kato are in play. And I've said from the beginning, I would imagine that Ishin and Kato will go to the semifinals and then lose in the semifinals before they get to the finals. The only question is coming out of that A block, is it going to be Kame and Rita, or is it going to be Susumu and Kagetora, who, when you look at it that way, are two of the best teams in the history of Dragon Gate that are now vying for a spot seemingly in the Rey de Parejas finals, which is a good place to be.
Right, and I would say that other than like the initial Gianni Mianmian blip, this block has been kind of what you would expect the three really established, especially in 2026 booking, you know, tag teams are the ones that are looking to go through. And even though we had Genki Mania, we have seen it kind of pan out because they have SMJ and Leona, so I guess they can get a win there, but I just don't really see much more happening there. So in a weird way, after we got away from Cork and this block became more and more chalk the further we got away.
Yeah, I think very much so. It's shaping up to be certainly nowhere near as good as the B block, but just sort of looking ahead to that schedule, I guess I'm at a point where I'm at least morbidly intrigued by Kanda and Horiguchi versus Ishin and Kato, just to see what that match looks like. That's going to be on the 22nd. But more importantly, the thing that I think is going to swing match quality for the A block and sort of raise the entire profile of what the A block is capable of is the night show on August 23rd in Fukuoka. That is being headlined by Kame and Rita versus Kagetora and Susumu. I was very worried that Dragon Gate, as per usual with their Twin Gate division, would not know what they have, and they would try to bury that match like fourth on that card. But no, that's headlining Fukuoka. To me, that match is a draw. If I was in the area or in the surrounding areas, that match would certainly get me into the building. That's the rematch from the Twin Gate match at Uno Dos Tres earlier this year. I'm elated that they're doing, one, just a rematch to begin with, two, they're doing that rematch, and three, it's headlining the night show. I think that could end up being a very, very special match.
Yeah, and the weird way that this block is, like Susumu and Kanda, I kind of think are going to win that match because they have the last match of the... Oh no, Ishin and Kato versus Jackie Rita is the last match of the block. Never mind.
So
those are the last two matches of the block are Hyo and Johnny versus the original Jimmies, and then the next night will be Jackie Rita versus Team 204.
So you have to wonder at that point, Susumu and Kagetora against Hyo and Valletta, that's on the 29th, and then Ishin and Kato versus Jackie Rita's on the 30th. So you have to wonder if Kagetora and Susumu, they're probably going to beat Kame and Rita, and they're probably going to beat Hyo and Valletta, and then Kato and Ishin versus Rita and Kame. Pro wrestling booking would tell us that that match is going to decide second place in that block, which gets you into the semifinals at Korakuen.
Yep, that's the logic I see too.
Boy, that is a really interesting semifinals if you get Kagetora and Susumu and Kame and Rita in the semis. Because then I'm into the finals no matter what. Ishin and Kato, it's a little bit more dicey.
Yeah, and I feel like with the idea of that the Rey de Parejas winner is likely going to have a Twin Gate match at Tokyo Infinity Hectopascal that you getting the Twin Gate team, unless you're going all the way, and that's not the way that they're booking Team 204, at least to this point, unless they're going all the way and clean sweeping and we're like cementing Team 204 as the Dragon Gate team of the year, essentially, you have to get them out at a good place, and you're not going to take them all the way to the finals. So, I mean, it's good that we're in this situation right now looking at the A block, and that you have two other viable teams for that semifinal opportunities, and the booking does look like that it's kind of shaped up there. Like, I expect that we will probably eliminate SMJ and Leona after the 25th, the match with Jackie Rita there. Mm-hmm. And then all direction kind of turns into kind of this three-team playoff across those two matches.
So Susumu and Kagetora, they're going to wrestle Ishin and Kato on the 21st. I would imagine they probably... they're not going to sweep their block. Well, they didn't. They lost on 8-4. So they probably beat Ishin and Kato. They probably beat Kame and Rita. And they beat Hyo and Valletta. And they come out of the block with 8 points. And then Ishin and Kato are going to beat Strong Machine J and Leona. They're going to beat... Well, they've already lost a combination. So they're going to have to beat Strong Machine J and Leona and Kame and Rita. But that gives them 4. That gets interesting really quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah, no. It's the way that you kind of have to book this out, I think, is that either I think Susumu and Kanda, or I'm sorry, not Susumu and Kanda, Susumu and Kage went on the 21st.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Team 204 went out. You have, and that way that Hyo and Myon Myon match, they eliminate, it becomes a match of consequence at that point, because at that point they would be at 4 and they would need to get that, or they would be at 4 or 6 and looking to either make it to 6 and 8. And six and there will probably be a 6-point team coming out of the block, and it could still lay up for them with that. But it could, but then you got like the tiebreak situation with Jackie and Rita. Like,
yeah, it's odd. I don't want to fully go into Dave and Brian doing G1 math, no, even though I started it. That's my fault. but I think we know at this point, and we'll break all of this down after the NARA show on the 30th, before the finals in Corkenhall. So we're doing those days, Michinoku Pro, next week, but you'll get one more Ray Day Parayas update after block play is over. But it seems like Kame and Rita, Susumu and Kagetora, and Ishin and Kato are the teams that are going to be in play for the A block. As for the B block, which I think from an in-ring perspective, as we figured, has been much, much higher than the A block, you have Zenith of Yoshioka and Minoru at 4 points. You have Cielo and Monte at 4 points. You have Flamita and Sangre Azteca Jr. at 4 points as well. Hamare and Kazuma Kimura, this is not
they haven't
updated. This is not updated. You're right. Let me see if I can get an updated version of this real quick.
The only change there is that they're at 2 points.
Gotcha. And then after that, you've got Aki and Gucci at 0, which is a crime against humanity, and Jason Lee and Madoka Kakuta also at 0.
Which I think is kind of the big story of the block there, is that they are full resetting Kakuta and within this tournament, the fact that they are already out of the tournament. Like, there's no real way for them to, with 6 points, they would still not have the tiebreakers against Zenith nor Monte and Cielo to advance on. They could get a tiebreaker over Flamita and Azteca. That's kind of their only pathway through. But at this point, they don't have the tiebreakers. And I think that's kind of the story of the block. I mean, we anticipated that Zenith would be near the top at this point. Monte and Cielo, you were very high on with that. I guess really the fact that Flamita and Sangre Azteca are at 4, and that's probably where they're going to finish off at, I think, because they still have Zenith and Gaja Dokuro left, and I think that's where Gaja Dokuro finally gets some points on the board at that point. But it's a interesting kind of block. Young Vibes being at 0 is not a surprise to me. I like the fact that they had Kimura get that first pin in Kobe. It felt like a big kind of deal and like for that kind of step forward there. But I think Gucci and Aki are just there to be the workhorses of the block, and they've really proven to kind of be that with it, because I don't think that this was going to be, I don't think that there was really a world where they were going to make the playoffs in the first place in this block. So I already shifted my mindset to them to be workhorses.
I think this is highly unrealistic, but I guess I have to mention it just quickly, because as of the time we're recording, yes, Ishin and Kato only have the one match in the A block, but they did lose that. And Jason and Kakuta have wrestled two matches in the B block, and they're at 0 points. It would be very entertaining if Gaja Dokuro just lost out in this tournament, and we had some sort of shakeup angle at the September Korkin as a result of that. I think it's unrealistic, but I think it's realistic enough that I have to mention it.
Yeah, but they're at three losses too, so they're out.
Okay, yeah, no, you're, I mean, yeah, Jason and Kakuta, yeah, they're done, which I think is great. And that's part of what I like about this tour is there's just less suffocating things going on in Dragon Gate. Everybody can breathe a little bit more. Kakuta's still being pushed at the top of the card, and I think Kakuta's been awesome in Rey de Parejas, but he's not the champion, and he's not sucking up all the oxygen, leaving everybody else gasping for air. And so all of a sudden, it's much easier to consume. Just getting the belt off of him, I think, let everybody take a collective sigh of relief. And now, it's not like he's being pushed less realistically. He's just being pushed differently, and I think it's better for every party involved.
Yeah, and it's not like he's taking the falls here. Jason has taken every single fall for Gaja Dokuro. So they're still really protecting Kakuta in the process. And I mean, and in the way of doing so, I mean, you look at how essentially, like, you have the super kick in the schoolboy eliminating for Jason to lose. Cielo doing the spinning tombstone on him, and then Zenith, the golden rose on it. So it's all things that make a lot of logical sense with the way that they're handling this kind of team here. And I mean, they still have the two matches withstanding. I still think that they probably get on the board before they're out of there. But yeah, no, I mean, you have that aspect of this, and then you really have the fact that, you know, Team 204 hasn't been really shenanigan heavy with it. And the way that Kakuta and Lee have worked heel, at least, I felt like that it came off best in Kobe Sambo Hall, and the way that they were, that it was all basically built up around the massive heat that they put on Kimura, and with that sort of healing with weapon work and with that versus bad referee distractions with that. And I felt like that has helped the heel unit evolve. Because, I mean, like, that's kind of been one of the big talking points, I feel like, is what Gaja Dokuro will start to kind of look like without the title being on Kakuta. And I feel like that at least through this, they're immediately giving the fan base a chance to kind of take a break from Gaja Dokuro just completely dominating everything. You know, I mean,
it's needed. It's absolutely needed.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, you think about Gaja Dokuro is now basically a year old, that it's that kind of change has been needed for a while, and I thought that it was kind of necessary to kind of go through.
I also think, real quick, just in relation specifically to the way they're handling Gaja Dokuro, it's important, and this is an issue that I think all of Japanese wrestling is really struggling with. It's part of the reason that the G1 finals, I think, was as beloved as it was, is that it's Anzai has the mainstream stuff in All Japan going for him, but it helps that, you know, there's been a real glut of lovable Japanese baby faces that you can believe in. And that's sort of been a nationwide issue for the last few years. And so you get both Oiwa and Yumura, you get Anzai, and now you look in this tournament away from KZ, who I think it's totally okay that this tournament has no focus on KZ. He did not need to be in it. Yamato and KZ is a match that sort of takes care of itself, and Yamato has certainly tweeted enough to make sure that there's some sort of build for this match. You take away KZ, you have all these babyface teams that you can really rally behind. The A block, You have Kame and Rita. I think their history speaks for itself. To some degree, you have Hyo and Valletta. Not really what I'm looking for, but if you want to factor them in, you can. I think Minoru and Yoshioka have been a super exciting main event style babyface tag team. I think Homare and Kimura are jumping off of the screen. I think they are stealing the thunder that I thought Monte and Cielo were going to bring to this tournament. Mike, I told you 3 weeks ago when we were previewing this, I thought this was going to be a tournament that was going to be defined by Monte and Cielo. I thought they'd win the whole thing. I still think they might win the whole thing, but man, have I been disappointed with them. Whereas Yoshioka Minoru, they've been the great main event babyface tag team they need to. Homare and Kimura have so much energy and so much life to their matches. And Aki and Gucci are just this plucky, lovable, undercard babyface tag team. We're only going to get, because there's, you know, six teams in these blocks, we're only going to get five of their matches. I want to see 15 more tag team matches with Aki and Gucci. Just throw guys at them and let them kick their asses for a little bit. I am so entertained by those guys right now. But all told, this is a nice little reset for the babyface portion of this roster, as well as the heel portion of this roster.
Yeah, and I think Zenith just existing as a tag team that is a main event tag team that's out there to have good tag team matches is exactly what the doctor ordered for both the guys. I do think that we are getting Kota Minoura getting a little goofy. You notice that space flying drop he did? And just out of nowhere decided that he wanted to do a handspring elbow.
He's done it before. It doesn't mean it's not any less goofy than any other time he's done it. You're 100% right. It's goofy. It's like a... it's like a guy who's not funny trying to be funny. And it's not, it didn't totally bomb, but you go, that's not him in his natural environment. That's a little strange, isn't it?
Yeah, it looks like someone who you don't think is very athletic trying to do like a backflip into the pool.
Which is odd because Minoru's super athletic, but he loses all athletic ability when he tries to do that move.
Yeah, no, but it was something that on the Tsushima show that really popped me when that happened with it. But they've just been, it's just been like the Block B has been solid match after kind of solid match. I think that Flamita and Azteca, they had a much better match against Gucci and Aki than they did in Cork and against Cielo and Monte. And the place where my attention is going towards is the 22nd right now. Like the thing that I'm most excited about in this block. And that's on top of seeing like Yoshioka kind of find the groove of Minoru, and like, let's see, like in a way, are they going to have Cielo just tombstone everyone and try to take off Yoshiki Kato's head in this tournament? Like, that's kind of an interesting thing. But to me, the most interesting thing that's going to happen in this tournament is going to be on the 22nd when it's Homare and Kazuma Kimura versus Gucci and Aki. Like, that is going to be a real... I think that that's going to be a scrap fest between like that, especially at a point where Gucci and Aki would still be trying to get their first win on the board here. Like, and then Kimura now having the momentum coming after winning at Kobe Sambo Hall for the first time. I think that's a pretty exciting kind of opportunity of a match to happen between those two on the 22nd, or those four on the 22nd.
You know, there's three matches in this tournament that haven't happened yet that I am legitimately very excited about. There's in the A block, Susumu and Kagetora versus Kame and Rita on the 23rd, which that's the evening show. So I probably won't watch that live, but there's a chance that I do. And then in the B block, you're exactly right. There's that match, which is Homare and Kimura against Aki and Gucci, and that is on the 22nd. So that is
Nagasaki.
Not a network show. My guess is Nagasaki is the 22nd, Fukuoka is the 23rd. My guess is we get that Nagasaki show on the 24th, just based on the uploads. The other one, and this is one, it's a Sunday morning. I'm going to have the next day off of work anyways. August 30th, that Nara show is on the network. That's going to air live. And that is Homare and Kimura versus Yoshioka and Minoru. And that, to me, I don't know if it will matter in the grand scheme of things, but God, is that a really exciting match on paper now.
And it's a match that I feel like that the two spoiler matches of really the block are that match and Nara, and then the night before, Cielo Monte versus Gucci and Aki. Like, those are like kind of the two spoiler matches, because That's the last block. That's the last match in the block too. So for Zenith, I mean, that could pretty much hinge if they make the semifinals or not at that point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, the B block, it feels like the A block's a little bit more straightforward. We know those three teams. The B block, we know Aki and Gucci, no chance. Jason Lee and Madoka Kuta, a great effort, but mathematically eliminated. This now raises some questions as to what they're going to do. I mean, Monte and Cielo have 4 points, and they have a match with Aki and Gucci coming up, but it would not surprise me if that Natural Vibes team goes winless. So you'd have to think that Monte and Cielo at least get to 6, with their other match being against Yoshioka and Minora, who have that Monte and Cielo match. They have Hamari and Kimura, and they have, do they have one more? Do they have Flamita and Sangre Azteca also?
Flamita and Sangre Azteca have only Zenith and Gajidokor.
Okay, but they do have Zenith. Okay, so
yeah, Zenith on the 24th.
I guess let me ask you this instead of trying to do math on the fly again. Who do you want to come out of the B block?
I think that I want Zenith coming out of the B block.
I think that makes sense from a storyline perspective. At least get them in the hunt for a rematch with Ishin and Kato.
Yeah, and I've been of the mindset that I think that they're getting that rematch. And if it's not in the tournament, it will be them winning this tournament and then at Oda Ward is my I still think it's Zenith's tournament. So I think they're coming out of it. It's difficult between Cielo and Monte, because as much as I like, I've enjoyed Cielo, Monte has not been bringing it this tournament here. I don't necessarily feel, I have never felt the urge for Cielo and Kato, I guess is the thing that I'm kind of coming to terms with, that I'm much more interested in seeing Flamita and Sagre Azteca Jr. making the semifinals than Cielo and Monte. But that's because I'm just kind of, Cielo and Kato feels like a weird albatross of a feud at this point, and I don't need to see it right now.
You know what would be not to fantasy book here, but I think this is in play. It would be immensely satisfying if your semifinals were Yoshioka and Minora against Ishin and Kato, and Monte and Cielo against Kame and Rita, Zenith over Gaja Dokuro, Love and Peace over Monte and Cielo. And then whether you want to do Kame and Rita over Yoshioka and Minora, or you want to do Yoshioka Minora over Kame and Rita, to me, that's the finals. That's the way to go. That makes sense from a storyline perspective, because you make sure that Zenith get their win over Ishin and Kato. You get you, God forbid, do something with Love and Peace. I think Monte and Cielo versus Kame and Rita in Korkin, especially, you know, a semifinals match that's going to be match one or match two on the show, that's going to have a real frenetic energy to it. To me, there's no way that doesn't get over.
Yeah, no, I think that that's a real interesting final. And I think that for Zenith, and really Jackie and Rita, for their kind of legacy as an all-time tag team, they need to win a tag tournament, right? Like, when you compare them to your Nescas, your Speed Muscles, up and down the list of your great Dragon System tag teams, they end up winning a tag tournament. Jackie Rita have not done that yet. Whereas with Zenith, you have the aspect of Zenith is still so new that they need to kind of get the credential after losing at Kobe World. So it becomes a tournament where both sides desperately kind of need it for their legacy in a way. One in a much more long-term kind of perspective, and Jackie Rita, and one in a much more near term, thinking about the immediate launch of this unit.
And you know, as much as it might pay me to say it out loud, just being realistic here, for as much as you and I might think the world of Kame and Rita, ultimately, for a variety of different reasons, the ceiling on Minoru and Yoshioka is higher, both as a tag team, as singles wrestlers, overall legacy. It's just, I don't like it, but that's how it is. Put Yoshioka and Minoru in a chance to succeed. Give them the best possible outcome. Give them the most tools in their tool belt to get this unit off the ground and to make sure that there's more Zenith shirts at the October Korakuen show than there are going to be at the September Corkin show. And that's done by putting them in the ring with Kame and Rita.
Yeah, no, and I think for those two guys, especially further cementing the Minoru rehabilitation, that is the step that they kind of need. They love whenever a guy needs rehabilitated to get them with someone else and then giving them a bunch of plaudits. Like, that is almost Dragon System 101 booking, which it feels like in a way that Ryo Saito has somehow refound the Journal of Dragon System's booking secrets over the last month.
God, Mike, this is nice that we have not been able to dig our claws into booking like this in a while. This feels good. I'm in this tournament. Look, it's not
Royal Sambo felt great.
This tournament's not King of Gate 2016. All right, they're not reinventing the. This is not a Champions Carnival. It's not a Real World Tag League. It's not Summer Adventure Tag League 2008. All right, this tournament feels good though, and I will take that. On a year like this, the year that we've had watching and reviewing all of this dreck, this tournament feels good. And, a larger point here, and I guess at some point we should probably break down some of these matches, but one of the things I was thinking about today is I think the biggest problem with Rey de Parejas this year is a problem that is both a Dragon Gate problem and not a Dragon Gate problem, which is that the biggest sore thumb in this tournament, the thing that sticks out the most, the biggest flaw that we have here is that Strong Machine J is not teaming with UT, but he's teaming with Leona. And that's not a Dragon Gate problem in the sense that, hey, Leona looks out of his depth. He's clearly not the caliber of a Dragon Gate wrestler. He's not the caliber of any major league company wrestler. He is actively dragging these matches down. Come September 5th, that's not going to be an issue anymore. He's going to be gone, maybe outside of another one-off with his dad. Like, whatever. He's going to be gone. We don't have to worry about that. The problem is that they very clearly have some sort of financial arrangement with Leona or with Tetsumi Fujinami or with a sponsor that makes it lucrative to book Leona on this tournament instead of Strong Machine J and KZ or instead of Strong Machine J and UT. And that is a Dragon Gate problem. And that's something that I can't fully grasp, and that's probably a separate conversation to have with Jay.
But I actually would like to defend having Leona here for 1 second.
Oh, I am all ears.
Other than Osaka, having Leona here means that you're able to run Paradox versus Natural Vibes six-man tags to do Dreamgate previews, because KZ wouldn't have been in this tournament in the first place. It would have been UT, but now you get to have more combinations so that on these undercards and these non-tournament matches, you can keep Yamato versus KZ in mind. Because like that was one of the great things about this Royal Sambo was that they kept the pending Dreamgate match in mind when in past versions of the Summer Tag League, they did not keep the Dreamgate in mind.
All right, that's fair. I still, just for the sake of...
Oh, they probably can't pay. Let's be clear.
Yeah.
they're getting money, probably.
Yes. And I think, ultimately, again, I think this is one of those rare instances where being able to reset after World and do this tag league is actually super beneficial for all parties, because Tanaka and Dragon Kid and Yamato and KZ just sort of speak for themselves. And you could have gotten away with putting KZ in this tournament and putting Yamato in this tournament and having those guys in the same block. And I think that would have been really interesting, but you don't have them there. I would have rather this tournament been loaded, especially that A block. I would have rather that A block had one more great team. And I think you could have gotten there with Strong Machine J and UT, or obviously Strong Machine J and KZ. And Leona does stick out like a sore thumb, but you're right. They're not ignoring the Dreamgate. We've had that issue in the past with tag leagues, especially the ones that happened right after Kobe World. So even with some bad comes some good there. So I'm bothered by it, but not as much as I was 5 minutes ago.
No, and it's still Leona being foisted upon us. Like, we can't absolve all sins here. It has, though, I would like to say, just present a little bit of a perspective that maybe it makes other things feel a little bit more hot because of that. But let's talk about some of the matches of the last few weeks. I think the first one really kind of surprisingly to go out of our way for what was in Himeji in the A block with Yuzushi Kanda and Giki Horiguchi versus Jackie Rita, where for some reason, case for me, Kanda in tag leagues has been excellent. I mean, we talked about Susumu and him a couple years ago, but this year it just really feels like that he has been the kind of backbone on this tag team that has allowed kind of Ginky to do his own thing. And like, let's be fair, there has been kind of some a little bit of like tricky booking for him in a way, but like it's been a kind of a pleasant surprise to see this tag team kind of pull things off, and especially in Himeji on the 8th.
This is the match that made me realize that I was getting super into this tournament, because I did not love that Korakuen show, but I really, really, really loved this match. I went 4 stars on this. I think it's a notebook match. Same. I thought Kanda was good. I thought this was 100 times better than anything else Genki Horiguchi has done in 2026. This is the best Genki performance now in a few years, probably since Kumamoto 2023 on that homecoming show.
Sure.
That made the network that we really, really liked. But this was Kame and Rita just doing things that, again, they are the tag team of the year to me. They are the best tag team in the world. Rita coming in off of a hot tag is just, it is honestly the closest thing we have to it is those old Claudio hot tags, where Rita gets in the ring, he immediately just does a mushroom stomp on Genki Horiguchi. He runs in the ring and just jumps on this guy's head, hits a few more moves, that leads into a twisty dive to the floor on Kanda, and whatever lull there was in the match prior to that point, Rita immediately spikes the energy level in a way that makes sense within the context of the match and is also just unbelievable to watch. Down the stretch, so many near falls, some great, and I mean great, backslide from heaven teases. And then the other thing that I have to note before we get to the finish, Kanda hits a flurry of offense on Rita, and it leads
to...
It's so mean, it's vicious. I love the camera angle for this specific match where they're just shooting it in the corner underneath the bottom rope. I don't want all of my wrestling to be filmed that way, but it worked for a match like this. I think way more than like a hard camera in the back of the room. Kanda's got Rita lined up for the top rope elbow drop. And Kame comes in. Because of how they filmed this match, you can see Kame sort of get to the apron and you can see that he's going to do something. We've talked at length, we've talked a few different times, seemingly whenever he does this move, that springboard Hurricane Rana that he does from the top rope, that no one does like him, and quite frankly, no one should even try, because nobody is ever going to do it better than this guy does. He does that move in this match. He hit it so quickly and with so much precision. There's no setup time. There's no Kanda waiting for him to springboard. There's no reset. Once he does the springboard and Kanda catches him, as dumb as this will sound, it's as realistic as a springboard Hurricane Rana from the top rope could ever look. And it blew my mind. Great near fall there. Kanda comes back. He actually hits a John Woo onto Kame. Kame bounces off the turnbuckles and then right into the Jackie knife on Kanda. 1, 2, 3, 4-star match. Fucking outstanding.
Yeah, and to this point, this was the match of the tournament. To this point. And I just to spend a quick moment on Nagano, Hamare, and Kimura versus Lamita and Azteca Jr., this one really kind of led us to get to see more babyface Hamare and how much he's like really, since accepting a membership into Tanaka-gun and now Zena Style Nova at this point, him really blossoming as a babyface in this match was really cool. And, you know, Kimura has a really cool clutch pin that he pulled out as a near fall towards the finish. That was nice. And it was a lot of Kimura in peril, and he's great. He's a great babyface in peril at this point, only a year into his career.
You know, Hamare, I really liked in this tournament because at the end of the day, he's a flashy babyface, and he needs to be able to jump around the ring. And I think we saw that in the finals of last year's Rey de Parejas, where even with teaming with Shun, you know, he looked like the second coming of Ricky Morton. He looked like this all-time great tag team babyface, and we're getting that in this tournament where Kimura is able to carry a lot of the workload, and Himari can come in and choose his spots and hit super kicks and hit big dives. And, you know, I think he's been brilliant because I think he's wrestling the way that he needs to wrestle right now.
Yeah, and that has been really, really exciting to see. In Osaka, I know this is from the 11th, so this is pretty much a dead and dusted show here on it. The only thing that I was really worth touching on, I felt like, was the main event of Monte and CLO versus Kakuta and Lee. And we kind of talked about CLO. This team has felt a lot more about CLO than it has been about Monte throughout this tournament. And at least getting the win clean over Jason does make me feel like they're going somewhere. This CLO thing is just, I'm not super interested in.
No, I thought this was the weakest of the Kakuta Jason Lee matches so far.
Mm-hmm. And then in Tsushima, there was Zenith versus Kakuta and Lee. Speaking of the other one that I thought was much better than this one, and this was the one that had the Minoru Space flying elbow drop in it. He wins with the Golden Rose on Jason Lee with it. But I thought that it was the good tag work in this one overrode kind of the worst of the Gacha Dokro inferences that we got to see throughout this selection of Rey de Parejas.
I thought this had a really great second half. I wasn't totally feeling this in the early going.
There was a slow Yoshio Kakuta section in it. They still don't
shocker.
Have chemistry.
Those guys have just negative chemistry with one another. But once Minoru starts to heat up, this entire match starts to heat up. There's a portion of this match where for four heavyweight wrestlers, they are working at such a breakneck pace. And one of those, you know, guy comes in, move. Next guy comes in, move. Next guy comes in, move. Next guy comes in, move. They have one of those in this match that for only four guys involved, there's a level of annihilation by the end of it that is pretty staggering to see. But the pace that they work at is just jarring because you expect that from Kame and Rito. You expect that from Aki and Gucci. You don't necessarily expect that from these four guys at this stage in their career, and yet they did that. And then a really gnarly finish on Jason Lee to boot. I went 3 3/4 on this.
That was one of the best, I think, pile drivers I've seen getting hit all year.
Yeah, you know, really, Jason, really good.
It really felt like, because like that kind of over-the-shoulder pile driver, you're able to kind of hide the head a little bit more. This one, with the way that Jason sold it, it looked like that it was like one smooth, solid motion of him, like tucking him in on the body at the end of it. So it was absolutely stunning for that. Yeah, I was 3 3/4 on that. And then this Kobe Sumbo Hall show, I think the top two tag matches were worth touching on. I do want to point out we did have Tristan Moody having to do kind of he was involved in the touch football match on the show, but he was great in it, and it was him taking the heat in a tag with Ultimo. That was kind of fun. That was fun for what it was here, but really on this 8/26 Kobe show, the semi-main event of Zenith and Young Vibes, and then the main event of Kakuta and Lee and Himari and Kimura were, you know, the best 1-2 matches I think we've seen of the tournament so far. The best night of matches, I would say.
I agree with that. I think these are the two best matches of the tournament. Maybe flip Himari and Kimura versus Jason Kakuta with the Kame and Rita versus old guys tag, but you're talking
about
two of the three best matches in the tournament at the very least. To me, it's not even a conversation. It should be the biggest runaway in the Observer Awards this year. And unfortunately, the guy probably won't even place. But Gucci, by definition, is the Observer's most underrated wrestler of 2026.
Yeah, like this match was the Gucci show. And then you had a real grown-up Aki performance to close out on the hot tag. And it kind of was like, okay, we've seen them now in Natural Vibes for 7 months now. And yeah, they had the Triangle Gate run with it, but that was still very formative for them. This was like the most grown up Young Vibes tag team that we've seen with them. And then with Zenith, they were the perfect foil for this team that is there to have good main event tag team matches. And you have the plucky young team there The booking is out of the toilet. So guess what? It's going to be a 4-4 quarter style match. And the finishing stretch was just incredible as well. Like, I absolutely bit on the Darkness Buster. I thought that that was going to be it on
the closing stretch. That was not only such a great near fall, but Yoshioka did that in the most violent fashion possible. I mean, he really tried to drive Gucci through the mat on that one. And it's one of those things that's nice to see. Even if we're trying to get Yoshioka and Minoru off the ground as a babyface tag team, they read the room. The dynamics were clear. This was a crowd that was going to be into young vibes more than they were Yoshioka and Minoru. They weren't booing Zenith, but there's that underdog fight that Gucci has that you can't ignore. And you have to play into that if you're going to have a match like this against that team. And Yoshioka slammed the shit out of him on that Darkness Buster. That was so much fun to see.
Yeah, it really, in my mind, like, through this tournament, there's been a bit of me going like, all right, who do I want Gucci to be the first round matchup of in King of Gate 2026? And the answer might be Yuki Yoshioka, because he, in that closing stretch, was just really, really strong with him there. Zenith gets the win with the flashbang. That's not usually a Yoshioka finisher, but I guess he was not feeling like doing a high-fly flow. And I would argue that in this kind of match, you don't need the high-fly flow there. It feels much more kind of impactful to put the young guy in the dirt that kind of way. And it just, it was the longest match on the show. I think it might be the longest match of the tournament so far, but it held every moment with it. And again, like, I know we always give the flowers to Gucci, but Aki, I felt like his running off the turnbuckle into a full splash, not going for a shoulder tackle, but going into the
spot, that was
showing just such awareness, which I don't think we always saw out of him to this point.
That 1-2 punch, he does the crossbody splash off the apron onto Minoru right as Gucci does the double knees on Yoshioka. That 1-2 punch was absolutely electric. Gucci won't win most underrated this year. He will probably win the other coveted award in wrestling, though, which is the Joe Lanza aneurysm while reading SFM 50 results, because
there's no one coming out of the Dragon Gate Dojo who would be more anti-Joe Lanza than Gucci.
I disagree. I wish Joe would fucking watch the guy. I actually think Joe would really like him, because he's not.
Oh, I don't think he'd get over the fact that he would think he looks like a dweeb.
But you know what? He doesn't wrestle like a dweeb.
No.
His offense has a punch to it. I was texting Joe today. I'll send him some matches. I know he's not going to watch him, but I will say, you know, for the first quarter of the year, it's like, all right, like, you know, I think it's a bit of a hot take to have Gucci in my SFM 50, but he's like a 45-50 guy. And then the year went on, it's like, well, yeah, he's a top 40 guy. And then I watch a match like this, and I'm like, I mean, Gucci, welcome to the 30-40 range with a few months to go. You could be a top 30 wrestler by the end of the year. He has been my guy this year. I think he's incredible.
Yeah, no, he has been exceptional, and I still really think that that they're missing out if they don't do Yoshioka versus him in King of Gate this year. And then the main event, Xenocell Nova versus Gaja Dokuro. They give Kimura his first direct win in the tag league in a building that, I mean, Hamare was made in this building at Rey de Parejas last year, so it was kind of a nice little moment there on this. And just a real professional heel versus young babyface main event. I mean, like, that's the thing about this tournament. This feels like a professional wrestling tournament and not like a giant clown car of bad ideas. And that's what the company felt like for the last 6 months.
You're exactly right. This was fucking awesome. The sequence of Kakuta having Kimura trapped in that leg lock and then elbowing the life out of him.
God, those elbows were like, he came for murder. He came for murder. That's the Kakuta we want to see.
So gnarly, and it just avalanched from there into this really hot finish. You know, Kimura is able to get up from that, sideswipes a big boot, judo throw and cross arm breaker on a guy that just held the Dreamgate title, and people are buying into that as a near fall. So you get these big heavies going at each other, and then, like I said earlier, you get Hamare wrestling the matches that I think Hamare is kind of born to wrestle. You know, this is the style of wrestling he was doing Rey de Parejas last year. the Cypatro weekend where he had the bad shoulder, but they won the Triangle Gate belt, and we all really like that stuff. You know, this is the guy. And I think right now, if that's better suited in a tag match than a singles match, I think that's okay because he's now in a unit with Tanaka. Tanaka's going to take the brunt of those big singles matches, as he should. Let's keep this guy by Kimura's side. Let's keep this guy in trios matches. I still am as bullish on Himari as anybody in wrestling in terms of headlining the company's biggest show of the year at some point in their career. He was great in this match. Jason was great in this match. Kakuta was great in this match. I fucking love Kazuma Kimura. He's been awesome since his debut. I'm glad he's in this unit. I'm glad he fits into this unit the way that he does. That finish was great. Props to him. 4 stars. I really, really enjoyed this.
Yeah, it just like making a guy and making this win feel like so impactful with it. And, you know, it just was exactly like they were teasing it out for Kimura, and they found like the most impactful place for him to get that win. And if they lose the remainder of the block, which they probably should, that they will probably finish out at like 1-3 or 1-4. Like that's fine. But it just was like such a affirming performance from Novastal, Xenostal Nova. Oh, I keep on wanting to call it Novastal for some reason. Also, this unit sounds like a kind of medication.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah. We haven't complained about that this week, but it's just such a exciting time in this tournament, and especially like having the tournament kind of go off for a couple days and coming back with the coming back later this weekend. I think that like they left it at the right note. I know that there was a crazy Prime Zone run by Yagi today with like 3 different new Florida brothers, but it felt like that, like at the halfway point, like that was like the right kind of match to send us to the halfway point.
I agree. I really enjoyed this tour. I've really enjoyed the booking. I'm excited to see where things go. Like I said earlier, this is the most enjoyable tour since January when Big Boss Shimizu was killing everybody. I am very into Rey de Parejas right now.
Me too. I'll be looking forward to in 2 weeks to do another catch up right as we go into the finals at Cork and in September. But Case, next time y'all will be hearing from us in the feed, we'll be returning to Michinoku Pro as we enter the busy last quarter of the year, as they're getting not just their TV on Gaora, we have Samurai TV in the picture, just a whole lot of stuff coming up on those days coming up next week. And that's going to do it for us this week on the program. You could follow us on social media at Open the Voice Gate, both Twitter and Blue Sky. Case is at _ in your case. I'm at Fujiheya. That's going to do it for us here. We'll be back with you next time. Take care, everyone.
New Japan Pro Wrestling is so back. Are you out of the loop? You want to know what's happening before the rest of the Yankoid imbeciles? Want to find out who be the top guys in AEW in 2028?
Then listen to the Super J-Cast, premier authority of New Japan Pro Wrestling, that keeps Chris Charlton up at night.
We cover New Japan at every level, in the ring, the backstage politics, the cross-promotional drama, the history, and what it all means for the future, the good, the bad, and the great Okan.
And no company glazing PR here, no move-by-move recaps. Just brutally honest analysis, unrivaled contacts inside the company that put the rest of the wrestling journalists to shame, and quite frankly, irritating track records of being right before everyone else.
We broke the Okada story. We broke the Forbidden Door story. We've told you what was coming before, and we'll fucking do it again.
Super J-Cast, listen now. Then, in 3 years, pretend you knew it all along.